It's Thursday, July 9th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, Greece's prime minister is working on a final plan for a bailout, but we talk with an analyst who's unconvinced it will work.
I don't see how their three-year program is going to deal with a very heavy debt load unless the three-year program entails writing off about half the debt, and I don't think it will do that.
Historians and families of Japanese Americans interned during World War II worked to preserve the lessons of the tragic experience, and country musician Brantley Gilbert marries his longtime sweetheart and sings all about it. A Greek newspaper reports Greece is preparing a last-minute reform package worth more than $13 billion over 2 years in exchange for continued bailout funds from its international creditors. The government of Prime Minister Alexis Tsipras faces a Friday deadline to submit a reform for aid package to its European partners. The proposal precedes a crucial European Union summit Sunday that will determine Greece's future in the 19-nation eurozone. The plan will reportedly be paid for with tax hikes on corporations, luxury goods, processed foods, restaurants, transport, and some health services. In Washington Wednesday, U.S. Treasury Secretary Jack Lew told an audience at the Brookings Institution think tank that it's in everyone's interest that all parties in the Greek fiscal crisis find a solution for the sake of the global economy.
I have continued to believe that it is in the best interest of all parties to find a resolution. Greece needs to have a sustainable debt path and towards a growth path in their future, and a good agreement would give them a better shot at that. I think it's a mistake for the European economy, the global economy, to take the risks that are involved with an uncontrolled crisis in Greece. That's different from saying there's an immediate impact. You know, you look at the differences between Greece and the European partners and the institutions. Before things broke down and they went to a referendum, they were within a couple of billion euros of closing the gap. There's hundreds of billions of risk and a couple of billion dollars of space. Now, for any of us who've participated in, you know, budget and fiscal policy discussions, you know, you wouldn't usually buy hundreds of billions of dollars of risk for a couple of billion dollar gap. I believe there's still a solution available here. It's not entirely clear, as anyone following the situation knows, that they will find that solution. I think it's very important in terms of the economic and geopolitical stability of Europe. But it's something that Europe will have to do. They have to solve it. We have been very much engaged offering our advice and trying to help the parties to understand the options they have.
Lew acknowledges there's a reluctance within Europe to restructure Greek debt, which he calls unsustainable. He says the question is, can the parties build enough trust to allow Greece to take the actions needed? He warns the deadline to reach such an agreement has raised the stakes for the global economy. Gary Huffbauer with the Washington-based Peterson Institute for International Economics tells International Edition's Victor Beatty that he doubts the Greek plan will be approved. He believes the likelihood of Greece leaving the eurozone has increased.
I think it's a really touch-and-go situation, whether at the weekend the EU, Angela Merkel in particular, tells the Greeks, thank you, but time to leave the euro. I don't see how their three-year program is going to deal with a very heavy debt load unless the three-year program entails writing off about half the debt, and I don't think it will do that. So I believe Merkel will see that they're just kicking this can down the road and will reject it.
And you see a Grexit, as they're calling it, an exit of Greece from the 19-nation eurozone.
Yes, that's my view, that Greece will leave the eurozone. They'll provide some, when I say they, I mean the International Monetary Fund and the EU, the ECB, the European Central Bank, will provide some transition assistance to go into this separate currency area. That's my projection, and that they will essentially default on about half the debt, because the debt load is about twice what Greece can reasonably expect to service.
Is this going to create a pathway for other weaker members like Spain, Portugal, Italy, perhaps to leave?
Well, you've asked exactly the right question. This is the fear of the central leaders, which would be Merkel and Hollande and a couple of other prime ministers, whether this means that there'll be an expectation of disintegration of the eurozone. So I think they will back it up by very strong measures by the European Central Bank to support the bonds of especially Italy and Spain. France is not such an issue right now. But, you know, the issue is, can this populist uprising in Greece be replicated in Spain or in other countries as a way of walking away from difficult economic problems? And that's what the leaders in Europe want to try to avert. It can't be an easy path for Greece to leave. On the other hand, you have to show support for Italy and Spain. This is a very tricky problem.
Well, as you know, there is an anti-austerity movement called Podemos in Spain. Yes. Is this likely to embolden them?
Oh, yes, absolutely. It depends on the terms by which Greece gets off the hook. See, this is the problem that Merkel faces. If she is very soft on Greece and says, oh, I'll take your three-year program and, you know, kick it down the road, that's just fuel for this populist movement in Spain. And she's fully aware of all of this. So I don't see how she can, you know, be very soft on Greece and hope to keep the eurozone together.
Gary Huffbauer of the Peterson Institute. He says both the Greek crisis and China's recent stock market woes pose serious problems to the global economy. Huffbauer was recently in Shanghai and warned Chinese officials they allowed their markets to rise too fast, even as China's economy was slowing. Now he says it's time for them to allow promised reforms to work and let the market correct itself and not intervene. The benchmark Shanghai Composite Index posted a nearly 6% rise Thursday after new Chinese regulations barred large state-owned firms from selling shares for 6 months, reversing a three-week slide that saw market values plummet more than 30%, a loss equivalent to more than $3 trillion. Huffbauer says China's task now is to keep the market slide from hurting confidence in the world's second-largest economy. Well, joining me in the studio is social media editor Andrew Palshevsky. So, Andrew, what's happening?
Well, the two top stories we were talking about this morning, Greece and China, were trending. You heard the term in that report just a few moments ago, Grexit, and that hashtag Grexit and Greece and exit, the two words combined together. That hashtag is still trending. People are weighing in throughout social media across Greece and across Europe about what they think should happen. With regard to China, there was another story yesterday in the New York Stock Exchange stopped trading for about 3 hours due to a technical glitch. And so the financial markets were kind of up in arms. They said, first China, now New York. What's going on? But thankfully, in New York, it was just a regular technical glitch. It wasn't anything nefarious. Also trending in social media today, the Senate Intelligence Committee, passed a bill that would require social media companies, Twitter, YouTube, Facebook, to report terrorist activity, the idea being that this will protect the companies from kind of spying on their own users and gives them a way to report things that involve explosives, weapons of mass destruction, to try to prevent some of the groups like ISIS that are using these social media. So that's a way for them to report these things, get that out of the open, and kind of counter what ISIS is using social media for. Another way that it's being countered is through the new Sawab Center. This is a new center. It's between the U.S. and the United Arab Emirates, just opened in Abu Dhabi. Sawab is the Arabic word for right or proper way. And the center is aimed at countering ISIS propaganda on social media. It's going to post videos and tweets and Facebook posts that stops or tries to stop what they're doing in social media. So a way, the first way to really counter the way that ISIS is using social media in an official capacity. So we'll see how that works out and what they do with that in the coming weeks as the social media battle continues. And then finally, we have a story. Michael Douglas, a Hollywood actor, famous Oscar-winning actor, did an interview with the UK's Independent newspaper, and he said that American talent and actors and actresses aren't getting roles because they're too image-obsessed, too busy on social media. That's why all the good roles are going to Australians and Brits, because they're more into their craft and actually trying to improve themselves and be good actors rather than taking selfies and doing that kind of thing. So he's weighing off on social media and says that people shouldn't be, at least actors and actresses, shouldn't be as image conscious. They should focus more on their work. So strong words from him. It's interesting. He's about 70 years old. I don't know if a lot of young people would agree with him, especially those actors and actresses getting their names out there on social media, but He's shared his opinion.
Yeah, that's what he says. Okay, yeah. Well, thanks very much, Andrew. That's social media editor Andrew Polshevsky. This is VOA.
Here's Science in a Minute.
Vitamin C is a popular nutritional supplement. Now, a new Danish study shows that a high concentration of vitamin C in the blood can reduce the risk of cardiovascular disease and early death. Researchers also found that instead of merely taking vitamin C supplements, the best way to gain these health benefits was to eat fruits and vegetables high in the vitamin. The researchers analyzed the data of about 100,000 Danes that included their DNA as well as the amount of fruits and vegetables they consumed. They found that those who consumed the most fruit and vegetables had a 15% lower risk of developing cardiovascular disease and a 20% lower risk of early death than others who rarely eat fruits and vegetables. The researchers are trying to find out if there are any other factors, along with the vitamin C, that play a role in reducing these risks. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, a country musician celebrates his marriage to his longtime sweetheart. After Japan's surprise 1941 attack on Pearl Harbor brought the United States into World War II, President Franklin Roosevelt signed an executive order to summarily round up Japanese immigrants and Japanese Americans living along the West Coast. Living witnesses to the forced relocation are growing fewer every year. Correspondent Tom Bansi tagged along on an annual pilgrimage to the Mindanao internment camp in southern Idaho to find out how their descendants and historians want to preserve the memory and lessons from the unjust internment.
Minidoka was one of 10 main camps built to confine civilians of Japanese ancestry during the war. It held people from coastal Oregon, Washington State, and Alaska, most of whom were U.S. citizens.
Well, yeah, I hope you guys all have some good walking shoes on. The former internment camp
is now managed by the National Park Service, and it's also the destination for an annual pilgrimage.
The fire of the potbelly stove was in the corner, and then we had a triple bunk on this side.
Sam Kito Jr. was 5 years old when his family was crammed into one room in a barrack block guarded by soldiers amid the dusty sagebrush of southern Idaho.
And then a double bunk on this side.
At its peak, Minidoka internment camp held nearly 10,000 people. Kito, now 77, says it was his daughter's idea to join the organized pilgrimage to the site. Hope Kito is a nurse in Bellingham, Washington.
It's something that I always heard about growing up, but it's not something that anyone ever talked about for a while. And I don't think that the magnitude of it was ever expressed. So it was worth coming with him.
When you get new people or younger people involved, and what happens is that your mind starts thinking about what should have been better for your parents and your generations. Well, that's great, you know, but you can't rewrite history. You live history the way with the cards that were dealt to you, and then you make sure it doesn't happen again.
75-year-old Mary Tanaka Abo was held in the camp when she was a child. Her family was evacuated, to use the parlance of the day, from Juneau, Alaska, in the midst of war hysteria.
Being here made me ashamed of being Japanese when I was young.
Abo came on the pilgrimage with her daughter and two grandchildren. This was the second trip back for the retired teacher.
And so, just being around people is always good.
Nearly 200 pilgrims journeyed to the site on the final weekend in June. Co-organizer Biff Brigman says the idea that sparked the first Minidoka pilgrimage 13 years ago still resonates.
We're losing the Iseis, the first generation, and Niseis, the second generation of Japanese Americans, and we're afraid of losing those stories. That's one of the things that pushes us to do it annually, to keep doing it.
Brigman says the number of firsthand witnesses decrease with each passing year.
We can see that those memories, those stories are slipping away.
Minidoka National Historic Site Superintendent Judy Geniak also feels the urgency to capture more voices of witnesses before they go silent.
and would be incredible for us to figure out a way to have young people interviewing, whether it's their great-grandfather or it's their next-door neighbor. And we know that people from the camp went all over the United States after they left the camp.
Meanwhile, the physical remains of the Minidoka camp, which nearly disappeared, are being resurrected. A guard tower, barracks, mess hall, and fire station have been rebuilt or restored in recent years. Geniac says a visitor center is in the works, as are plans to recreate the central baseball field. For VOA News, I'm Tom Bonsi at the Minidoka National Historic Site near Twin Falls, Idaho.
This is VOA.
Hashtag VOA. It's a weekly show, Tuesdays at 1730 UTC, where we bring you the top topics of the week. But the show lives on social media every day with your daily video shorts, What's Trending Wednesday, and the Friday Fast Five. Subscribe to the show at YouTube. You can find us at hashtag VOA. You can reach me at Twitter, at Perry Cal, or talk to the show anytime. Please don't forget to like us on Facebook. We like to be liked. We love to be seen. And you can reach us anytime.
Hi, my name's Larry London. Welcome to Border Crossings, your request and dedication program here at the Voice of America. 1500 Universal, Monday through Friday, we're there for an hour playing your favorite music. You can send an email in and request your favorite songs by your favorite artist. You can also phone in as well. We have great contests and surprise guests from time to time. Border Crossings, every single day during the week at 1500 Universal, here on the Voice of America.
This is International Edition. If you're a fan of country music, Brantley Gilbert's story reads like the lyrics of a song. A man who reunited with a long-lost love, but she's married to someone else. International Edition's David Byrd speaks with Nikki Strong about Gilbert's story.
Summertime in the Northern Hemisphere is the time when a lot of folks get married. Country musicians are no exception. But the story behind one relationship is almost like a country song in and of itself. Nikki Strong of VOA's Country Hits USA joins us in the studio. Nikki, Brantley Gilbert married his one-time former sweetheart.
Yes.
And this is a story.
It is saucy.
So now they met in church when they were young.
Of course.
And they kind had a little romance kindled, but then she went off and married somebody else.
Yes, they broke up.
And he was dating Jenna Kramer.
Yes.
And, you know, so now...
Yes.
Tell our listeners the rest of the story, as they say.
And I think it's interesting. He was dating Jenna Kramer. They broke up. She got married, so she's married. She just recently got married, literally,
right.
In May.
Right.
Now, his current CD is supposed to be about their breakup.
Okay.
Him and Jenna, right? Especially the song I'm Gone. Okay,
right.
Fine. So while he's gone, apparently his ex-girlfriend, Amber Cochran, was married already to another gentleman.
Right.
And they were apparently, supposedly happily married until Brantley Gilbert shows up on the scene again.
Mm.
And then all of a sudden, their marriage becomes rocky, and they file for a divorce. And she says that her husband was abusive towards her. And he said, oh, no. We're getting divorced because of your cheating ways.
Oh, no.
And go ahead.
Well, now, Brantley Gilbert has written, apparently, you were telling me, some songs that we've heard on country radio, like More Than Miles, and You Don't Know Her Like I Do.
Uh-huh.
These are about...
Amber. Yes.
Get
yes.
Out.
Those are not on his current.
No, they are not on the. No, they're on the one that has made him all that money. From
yes,
playing
exactly.
On the radio.
Well, he says that, you know, they've been together off and on for a long time.
Right.
They obviously had a very strong connection.
Right.
Obviously.
Yeah.
And so, but what I think is funny is that when she got divorced from her husband, 26 days later is when she announced her engagement.
Wow.
To Brantley Gilbert.
Oh my, now this is a song. If this were Taylor Swift, there'd have been a song written about this already. Also, Florida Georgia Line's Tyler Hubbard. I know young girls' hearts are breaking all over the world now because he got married as well.
Yes, he did.
Tyler is, you know, putting his Sundays on and, you know, all that kind of... He's going to be playing Flip Cup with a wife now.
Mm-hmm.
So he's married.
He is married. He's married to Haley Stummel. They got married July 1st. Now, this is romantic. That date was special to them because... it was the 2-year anniversary of their first kiss.
Oh.
Isn't that sweet?
My goodness.
That sounds like a country lyric, don't
that
you think?
That does sound like a country lyric. Of course, now here's a little something. Mr. and Mrs. Hubbard are headed to the Turks and Caicos Islands.
Isn't that nice?
For their honeymoon.
They are. Oh, wait, don't forget. Her golden retriever, Harley, wore a bow tie. He was the ring bearer.
Oh, my goodness. I'll tell you what. We welcome your comments, your questions, your tweets. You can hit Nikki up at @VOA_music.
Yes.
And you can also listen to her on Country Hits USA on VOAnews.com.
And that's our show. Please visit our website at voanews.com. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks very much for joining us.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
2014 saw no significant improvements in North Korea's deplorable human rights situation. According to the latest State Department Human Rights Report, which was just released, North Korea continues to deny its people basic freedoms, such as the freedoms of speech, press, assembly, association, religion, movement, and workers' rights. Furthermore, reports continued of a vast network of political prison camps in which conditions were often harsh and life-threatening, and prisoners were subjected to forced labor, starvation, torture, rape, and forced abortions. Defectors continued to report extrajudicial killings, disappearances, arbitrary detention, arrests of political prisoners, and torture. The judiciary was not independent and did not provide fair trials. Reports continued of severe punishment of some repatriated refugees and their family members. There were also reports of female victims of trafficking among refugees and workers crossing the border into China. The people of North Korea, said U.S. Assistant Secretary of State for Democracy, Human Rights, and Labor, Tom Malinowski, should enjoy the same rights and freedoms as the people of South Korea and the people of every country in the world who are able to speak their minds and elect their leaders and to travel where they want, and not to be placed in labor camps because of something they've said or thought or because of who their relatives are. In recent years inside North Korea, there has been far greater awareness among the population of what their rights are and of how people outside of North Korea live. What has sustained this regime over many years, said Assistant Secretary Malinowski, has been its ability to deny people that knowledge. And its ability to do that has eroded considerably in the last few years. And we are doing everything we can to try to get knowledge and information to the people of North Korea so that this trend continues. Change takes time, said Assistant Secretary Malinowski. But when it comes, it often surprises us and goes very quickly. And I think that day will come when we see that happen in North Korea.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage at www.voanews.com/editorials.